You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota. And this week we've got a serious show on our hands. You know how I like to change it up. One week we have someone talking about something more lightweight. Last week's show was very well received with Brian Kevin. Do go out and buy that book, The Footloose American. I can't recommend it highly enough. I read it all cover to cover, and it, for those people thinking of coming to Latin America, it's very well versed. It is an interesting take on Hunter S. Thompson, the gonzo journalist's travel through South America in 1962. Think about South America in 1962 with the dictatorships, the unrest, the instability, and of course, it's the height of the Cold War. So anyway, Brian Kevin has done an admirable job on penning that. And we spoke to him last week, and I have had a few tweets and emails from people appreciating that show. So, of course, we're always trying to follow in that vein. But this week, we're racking it up a bit, because we're going to be speaking to two individuals who are involved in it's an NGO. It's called Rodeemos el Diálogo, and Gwen Berniet and André Gómez. These guys are intellectuals, academics, and campaigners, really. And we're going to talk about the peace dialogues going on here in Colombia. Well, not in Colombia, in Havana, Cuba. Pretty much they've been going on with the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia since November 2012. So pretty much exactly 2 years now. So we're going to discuss where these dialogues are at the moment and where we expect them to go in the future. Now, André Gómez is a PhD candidate. He teaches at Oxford. He's spent time at the University of Sussex. He's involved in all sorts of things. And we'll be publishing a book on the genocide of the UPE, the Unión Patriótica here in Colombia. So we're talking with him, and also Gwen Berniet, who has been involved in the Peace Brigades International and has strong ties to Urabá in northern Colombia. That's the sort of area of northern Antioquia. Antioquia, of course, where Medellin is located, but northern Antioquia, which then opens out to a vast bay and into the Caribbean Ocean. So we're going to be talking about what they do with Rodeemos el Diálogo and where the peace dialogues have reached so far, and how they feel regarding these things. Now, so various issues have already been agreed. Overall of which we sort of know what's gone on. So there's been agreements on agrarian or agricultural reform, which Colombia desperately needs. And of course, there has been an agreement on political participation, which is pretty thorny, because those who are naysayers are worried that the government is ceding too many powers and too much influence to the FARC guerrillas. And then the last thing that has been agreed so far is that of illicit drugs. And of course, that's a big deal. And, President Santos was recently in Europe, I think a 6-country, 5-day tour, which took him through Germany and Portugal and Spain and France and Belgium and the UK, looking for money for a post-conflict period, looking for money to continue the peace dialogues, because it's an expensive venture. People forget about these things. But post-conflict period will be incredibly costly, because what are you going to do with all of these ex-combatants? Anyway, so yes, we'll be talking all about these things with André Gómez and Gwen Berniet, and it's quite exciting to have people who are thoroughly involved and thoroughly committed to, a conversation about the possibilities of peace and reconciliation in Colombia. And we need more of these. I've attended a couple of their meetings, which have been just very enlightening, and they've been literary meetings. I do believe that there are other meetings, but these have been literary meetings, with people discussing their feelings. And it's a fully respectful situation where everybody's allowed to talk and nobody is shouting over one another. So it's a real pleasure to have some people here sharing their knowledge, sharing their time, and talking about what we hope will be inevitable, and we hope we can iron out is peace in Colombia. Well, peace with the FARC to begin with, because we're still in the exploratory phase of talks with the ELN. That's the National Liberation Army, which is the smaller of the two groups. If you want to get in touch with me, that's ColombiaCalling@gmail.com. Of course, our website's ColombiaCallingRadio.com, and we're on Twitter @ColombiaCalling. I'm Richard McCall. Don't go away, because we'll be right back with Andre Gomez and Gwen Bernier talking about Rodeemos el Diálogo and the peace dialogues in Havana, Cuba with the FARC. Thank you. And we're back. This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall, and our very special guests this week are two, I guess they're sort of social work entrepreneurs, really. I mean, I don't know how to explain it, but you know how we do things here on Colombia Calling. So we go 1 week through a bit more lightweight issue, you know, talking to someone who's traveled in the country, and then the next week we talk about something more, let's say, current, something that needs to be talked about, and perhaps that we need to share with an international audience, so that people can get a better understanding of what really is going on in Colombia. So I've got Gwen Bernier and Andre Gomez, who are experts in a field of, sort of academia and humanitarian issues. And so we're going to be talking about their new, well, an organization to which they belong, which is called Rodeemos el Diálogo. So welcome on the show, guys.
Thank you very much, Richard. It's lovely to be here.
It's a real
Thank
pleasure.
Thank you, Richard.
It's Great. A real pleasure to be here as well with you guys. We finally got to sit down. Now, I've been to a couple of your meetings, and it's really interesting because we sit down in a small cafe with obviously other academics, and there's a guest speaker who comes with a theme, and we're discussing issues in Colombia. Now, how did you guys get involved in this, and what does Rodeemos el Diálogo mean?
Okay, great. That's a very good question, Christian and Richard. And I think the origin of Rodeemos is in London back in October 2012. And it's five friends that are in a pub having a beer and saying, hey, we need to start being more proactive about supporting the peace process in Colombia.
And which had only just begun.
That had just begun with President Santos and FARC. So they contacted me, actually, I was setting up a conference at UCL, mm-hmm. and at that conference we launched the idea of for other people to join Rodeemos el Diálogo. Mm-hmm. And since then we got a group of Colombians and friends of Colombia, mainly living in England, to start organizing different events. So we organized a conference, and then we did a series of conversatorios. And the more we started doing this, the more we thought that we should find small spaces with an audience of no more than 25 people to sit down and really create what we call a culture of dialogue. So to offer spaces for people to express their feelings, their fears, their emotions, and to start finding a way in which different positions could get to a more middle point and feel that, you know, we can move in a more constructive direction in terms of thinking about what is the contribution that we can make in peace building in Colombia. Then we flew from England to Bogota, and in Bogota we found this little cafe that you are talking about. And even though we knock on very different doors of institutions like the Office of the High Commissioner for Peace, we found out that we really that we need to do the things with our own hands. And so what we did was to start inviting our networks. And that's the reason why we started really from a grassroots level, I would say, grassroots in the middle classes, something that is quite particular to Rodeemos el Diálogo. And I guess that's the origin of the initiative.
Very interesting indeed. Now, Gwen, tell me something here. What does it actually mean, Rodeemos el Diálogo? And what's your background in Colombia? How long have you been here?
Those are two very different questions. Okay, I'll start. Perhaps I'll start with myself. I first came to Colombia in 2010, and I was doing a research project on things to do with victims and reparations for an international NGO. I'm from England, but I already spoke Spanish, and I'd been interested in Latin America for a long time, but I had no idea about anything to do with Colombia, anything to do with victims, anything to do with anything. And so I found myself kind of swimming at the deep end. And it was a very interesting way of exploring what the role of someone from an international community could be. I think as an international person living in Colombia, one is always acutely aware of the idea that you don't want to come here and do something that a Colombian could do and take away their possible job and also probably not do it nearly as well as they could. And so you want to really find a way of contributing to this society from an outsider's perspective or from something that only you could do. And I think that there is a role for the international community here. I then ended up working 2 years for an NGO called Peace Brigades International, which does accompaniment, protective accompaniment to human rights defenders and communities in conflict zones by sending teams of international observers to be present alongside them. And I was based in Urabá for 2 years, which was very interesting. And then I went back to England and I met these guys from Rodemos el Diálogo.
Over a beer in a pub.
Over a beer in a pub. The you're sensing the pattern here. Yeah. There have been quite a few beers and quite a few pubs in the history of this group. And I think what attracted me to it was in part this idea of civil society. I'd spent 2 years supporting social movements, and this was suddenly a social movement that I really could be a part of. And that it, as Andre said, I think there's something very special in the fact that we're working with middle classes. We haven't, you know, you have many organizations in Colombia that work with pedagogy, that work with victims, that work with campesinos, that work with women, that work with minority groups, but you don't have many people who are working with middle classes. And there are lots of people in Bogota, for example, who are very disconnected from current affairs. And I think, you know, I think it's important also to mention, okay, you asked me what does Rodemos el Diálogo mean? It's difficult to translate. Rodear literally means to surround or to support or to rally round. So it's, I guess, let's rally round the dialogue. So the idea is we just have two very simple objectives. The first one is that we believe in a negotiated solution to the armed conflict. And the second, what Andre said, the importance in creating a culture of dialogue and the fact that we believe that's incredibly important in the construction of peace from a society level. So those being our two things that we do. We're not an NGO, we're just volunteers, we're just people who like to get together and create spaces of discussion where we can learn and help others to learn and access information that they perhaps wouldn't otherwise have. And we don't have a political position as a group. We value diversity. We think everyone can have their political position, but we think it's very important to embody the idea that in a democracy, difference is a strength and not a reason to be in conflict necessarily.
Oh, I mean, fantastic. And you've got lots of information there. I mean, you've got a website up there so people can stay in contact and up to date with what you're doing. And I believe it's both in English and in Spanish. So for those of you out there a little bit afraid that it might only be in Spanish, it's in English too. And the website is rodeemoseldialogo.org. Now, that will be on our Facebook site, so you will be able to find it there on Colombia Calling. Of course, they are also on Facebook. Who isn't today? And that's Rodeemos Diálogo. And then on Twitter as well, the same thing, but it's abbreviated to RED, right? Red.
Yeah.
So anyway, so now you both, I mean, you both,
which got, means network,
which means network, of course,
which is what we are.
I want to talk a little bit about the meetings that you've got, because I've attended two, and they were two very different meetings. We had remember the name.
Ruth Padel, British poet.
British poet Ruth Padel. And the next one I went to was Santiago Gamboa, the author of various books here in Colombia. Now, is it always slightly literary based, or you're looking for people from all over, all spheres, to talk about the necessity of negotiation and conversation?
No, actually, we have very different initiatives, and it happens that you have come to the two tertulias that we have set up, that is precisely to talk about the link between literature and reconciliation, and that's the reason we had Ruth and Santiago. However, we have other initiatives that we think are very important and that work in a completely sort of different format, I would say. For example, we have a series of breakfasts that we do on Saturdays, and sometimes we have a special guest, but sometimes we don't. We just gather together 20 people. We eat some tamal. I'm not going to explain that. Probably Gwen could help. And we drink a hot chocolate. And around this breakfast, that is a very traditional Colombian breakfast, we try to have a horizontal discussion between the people who participate in the breakfast to think about what is the role of civil society in building peace, or, you know, to deal with difficult issues of the negotiations. For example, we have discussed the agreement on political participation. We have discussed the agreement on agrarian reform as part of the peace process. So that's one of the things that we have done. Recently, in those breakfasts, we are inviting people to talk about their research or to talk about the thing that they are doing. In particular, we have set up a series of breakfasts with the Office of the High Commissioner for Peace to demystify the peace process, so to try to deconstruct the myths that have been created by the opposition of the peace process in Colombia. That's one thing. The other thing that we're doing now with the University of Los Andes is that we have set up a series of cineforos to discuss conflict and peace in Colombia since the 1980s. So we don't want to show documentaries that are very famous in Colombia, but actually what we want to highlight is these sort of documentaries that have been remained like in the shadow, that they were presented perhaps in England, in Europe, that people abroad know that, but Colombians here do not know them. So we are discussing the Betancourt FARC peace process of the 1980s through this first documentary. Then we discuss like the Constituyente and the demobilization of the M19 in the 1990s, and the next cineforo that is next Wednesday is going to be on the Caguan peace process. So those are two of the examples of the things that we've been doing, and we have some other conferences and things.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd like to compliment what Andre has been saying, because I think the really important thing that he mentioned is the idea that we have these horizontal discussions. And I think one of the things that's really been inspiring to me is seeing how many people who have come to our events, who have incorporated in the group, have become empowered to do things themselves and to talk to their own personal networks in other spaces and become multipliers. And I think I'd like to tell an anecdote about that, because for me it's very powerful. I mean, in this country you can go to 5 conferences on the peace process a day.
Yes.
And you can go and listen to the important people, impart their important knowledge, and, you know, and that's very important. That's part of the working with civil society.
Yes.
But it doesn't take away from the fact that you don't have these spaces where you can actually sit down and let people who may have lots of knowledge about things or who may not talk, and let them express what they feel, what they think, and you know, we've created these dynamics with the High Commissioner's Office, who've been very generous and sent people who had different specialities to talk to us. But it's not about them giving us a conference, it's about creating a space whereby they and the other participants can create knowledge together. And I think the anecdote that I want to share is about a guy who came just to one breakfast, and he is from the upper middle class, works in business, nothing to do with peace process, and he never came back. But suddenly, coming up to the second round of elections, when there was a lot of tension, I'm sure you talked about it probably at the time, he said, you know, this message is not, you guys have the right message, it's about peace, it's not about politics, it's important to go and vote and exercise your democratic right and your democratic duty, but you're not getting to a wide enough sector of public. My cousin happens to make videos. So he called his cousin, and his cousin, who they did the invitation for their wedding, came and sat down with us, and we had a chat, and she said, look, normally I'd charge an arm and a leg for this, and it would take 3 weeks to make a 2-minute animated video, you know, one of these hand-drawn videos, and she said, but I really think this is important. And the guy whose idea it was, like, literally said, how long would it take you if you didn't sleep? And what is really the cheapest you could do it for? And really went out of his way to make her able to do a video for us at a really good price. And then we all stuck our hands into our pocket and we got together a video that was about the importance of the peace process, the importance of voting for peace, which is a controversial topic in itself, and what were the three main achievements of the discussion so far in very simple terms with cartoons. And it was great because it was something that he had decided he wanted to do. And so in a way, it's also about creating a platform whereby people can become empowered and suggest the own things that they want to do.
And I just to compliment what Gwen said, I mean, we went from, you know, perhaps getting to only 50 people who would read our relatorias in the website to more than 9,000 people watching the video in less than 2 days, mm-hmm. in the middle of the presidential campaign. So without really having party politics as our mandate, we had somehow an influence in people thinking about what was their role in the Colombian political process. And to say that, perhaps the other thing that Rodiemos is doing, and I don't want to drop that, is that we also do incidents. And some of the things that we do is to write letters to important political figures. And again, just to highlight what Gwen was saying, that people come with ideas and that we end up doing things that we didn't think we wanted to do. Last year, we decided to write a letter to the Pope, to Pope Francisco. And it was because one of the participants to one of the conversatorios that we have in London came to us and said, I'm very Catholic. And I feel that the Pope could send a message to all my community in Colombia to tell them to support the peace process. So we end up writing a letter to Pope Francis because of this person, and she took the role of writing the first draft and sending the letter to the Vatican. So I think this part of empowering people is central for Rodeemos el Diálogo.
I think you have great successes on the horizon because you can see you're breaking through and getting through to perhaps the right people on certain levels. We're going to take a short break right now. This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McColl. We'll be right back with further chats with Gwen and Andrew. Thank you. And we're back. This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McColl, and we're here with Gwen and Andrea. And we've been talking about all things sort of related to, the peace process, and of course, the importance of conversation, the importance of maintaining an open mind, really, and you know, discussing what's going on in Colombia, because we have a problem here with the mainstream media. I have a problem with the mainstream media because I cannot find anything that I want to read in it or listen to on it. And I watch the news every morning because I have to be up to speed. But it's all about car crashes, and it's all about someone, unfortunately, you know, stabbing their wife or something like that. You know, more scandalous thing. But for me, the most important thing going on in Colombia, of course, is this dialogue in Havana, Cuba, that started in November 2012. So we're now talking, you know, 2 years, and they are making progress. But of course, we're not given the whole information, or the press either aren't being allowed to print it, or they're just not printing it because they've got a different agenda, because these things do happen here in Colombia. So we're here with Gwen and Andre, who are very much involved in everything, and they've got this, they make up part of this organization called Rodeemos el Diálogo, which you can find online. That's rodeemoseldiálogo.org and Rodeemos el Diálogo on Facebook. And, you know, they've been making the middle class aware of what is going on in Colombia, because this is a very powerful section of Colombian society who perhaps are not as involved as they could or should be in these conversations. Now, I know we've mentioned the middle class on a couple of occasions, and there's nothing more middle class in the UK than supporting your royal family. And I know that you guys have got some big news about Prince Charles's recent visit to Colombia. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, I don't know if I really agree with you that there's nothing more middle class than supporting your royal family. I'd like to start by that, because I think those listeners who aren't au fait with British society may not be aware that actually, although around the world the British royal family are pretty sort of people kind of love them. People kind of think that they're really something special. How quaint, a royal family, the princess, the dresses, the wedding, the blah, blah, blah. Actually, in England, there's a lot of hatred towards the monarchy. Now, I don't profess myself to be anti-monarchic, but I do feel complicated about it, and I'm certainly not one to follow the antics of the royal family in the society magazines. That being said, I never ever thought that I would find myself writing to Prince Charles. Now, why did we think this was a good idea? Prince Charles came to Colombia with Camilla I believe he's only just returned to the UK as part of a diplomatic mission. I think it's important to recognise that the royal family do have a very important role in diplomatic relations. Also, they have a very important weight in public opinion, popular opinion, in Colombia. Colombians like the British royal family. But not just Colombians. Actually, when I was 18, I went to live in Paraguay and teach English for 6 months and learn Spanish. And the first question I got asked was, oh, so you're English. Is it true that you always drink tea at 5 o'clock in the afternoon? And I said, well, tea any kind of time of day, really. Is it true you always eat cucumber sandwiches with the crust cut off? I was like, I didn't really know what to do with that one. And then they said, and did you cry when Princess Diana died? I thought, wow, okay, you know, that's a real example of what the British royal family means in Latin American popular culture. So when we knew that Prince Charles was coming on a diplomatic mission to visit Colombia, we thought this is an opportunity to write to him and try and encourage him to use that position and that weight and importance that he has in order to do something to support the peace process. Now, perhaps André can tell us a little bit more in a moment about the sort of rundown of the peace process, but it's important to know that right now, one of the things being discussed in Havana is what to do regarding the 6 million victims of the armed conflict and how to deal with their rights and how to make reparations and how to recognise their suffering as part of a national narrative. And unfortunately, well, one of the fantastic things about the methodology has been 5 delegations of 12 victims from both sides, both from the guerrilla and from the state, from the paramilitary, victims of sexual violence, indigenous victims, people really diverse experiences of victimization have been going to Havana and talking to the negotiating teams, giving their personal testimony and making proposals as to what should be done. And we in RED felt that this was not only an incredibly important involvement of the civil society in the peace process, which was something that has been the methodology was criticised prior to this, but also very important to recognise the human experiences of the suffering. You know, you hear about in the Colombian media, I share your worries, Richard, about them, statistics, car crashes, sensationalist images. But you don't often understand that, you know, for a lot of middle classes in Bogota who have urban, normal lives, they've never met a victim. They don't know what a victim is, or that there's a kind of, actually, I'm not interested, or actually, that's happening in another part of the country, or, you know, and so it was very important that these people could be heard. And we thought one of the things that Prince Charles should do in one of his public appearances would flag up the importance of the role that these people are playing. And also, we were concerned that some of the people who had been to Havana and then gone back to Colombia had been threatened, had received death threats. And we thought it was very important that Prince Charles should express his concern regarding these threats and the fact that Colombian society, including the government, but Colombian society in general, should surround the victims, should support them, and should prevent these threats from being carried out. And so we decided to write this to him.
And how did you get the letter into his hand? It wasn't just an email sent out there. I mean, you had to physically
prince.charles@hotmail.com.
I think that's a good question, because it allows us to show precisely the transnational character of RED. Because we had a twofold strategy. The first one was in London, because one of the members of Rodemos El Diálogo works as personal advisor of Prince Charles. So he was the first one to approach him and hand over the letter to him in London before he was going to fly to Colombia. So we knew that he was aware of that. But as Gwen was saying, and as I guess most people would be aware, this is also a diplomatic gesture. So you don't hand over a letter in a private sort of meeting between the advisor and Prince Charles, but you need to do it in a formal way. So when Prince Charles landed in Bogota, we were invited to the embassy reception here in Bogota, and we handed over the letter to Camila to Camila. She obviously took the letter. We expressed a bit what the concern of the letter was, and the most interesting thing was to hear his speech the following day at the Center of Reconciliation, where he had taken on board every single one of the points that we have suggested in the letter.
What were those points?
The points, as Gwen was saying, basically were this. The first one, that we wanted him to encourage the Colombian government and Colombian civil society to rally around the victims.
Yes.
That we need to stand behind them and protect them, because we cannot let them, you know, be target of violence. That was the first thing. And the second thing that we asked him was to tell the world how revolutionary is the peace process in Colombia, because it's doing something that any other peace process so far has ever done, that is actually bringing the victims of violence to talk to the negotiation teams in Havana, to meetings that are usually closed door meetings, for them to consider what are going to be the mechanisms for the reparation of the victims and the protection of the rights that have to do also with justice, truth, and guarantees of non-repetition. So, and he actually took on board precisely all of those points that we were asking him to.
Fantastic. I mean, really important. I mean, you know, a lot of people sort of, let's say, poo-poo the visit and whatever, you know. You've completely knocked that back with the importance of his, you know, just a declaration at the Center for Historical Memory and you know, of the rights of the victims. Now, I can see the way this conversation is going, so we're closing in a little bit on the idea of the peace process, the peace dialogues, better said, there in Havana, Cuba. A lot of people out there will not, our listeners, will not know exactly what's going on in Havana, and they won't know what's, you know, what's being discussed, because it's not, let's say, the sexiest piece of news, although for me it is, of course, because I'm a journalist based here, but it's not the sexiest piece of news for, let's say, the international media until something really happens. Can either of you give us a little bit of a breakdown of what has gone on in the last 2 years of the peace dialogues with the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia and the Colombian government's negotiating team?
Great. Yeah, let me do that, Richard, probably. I'm going to try to be very concise, but let me just put this in a broader context. For 8 years, President Álvaro Uribe fought a war against terrorism. So for those 8 years, there was not a chance of peace negotiation with FARC. When President Santos comes into power, President Santos was the former Minister of Defense of President Uribe. He decides to start changing the whole approach to solve the armed conflict in Colombia. And in doing so, he approaches President Chavez and asks him to do the mediation between the Colombian government and FARC to sit down and solve the armed conflict by a negotiated solution. They bring the Cubans in, and then they decide that because of the previous experience in the Caguán, the only way how this peace process could go forward was by setting the negotiation table in Havana. So they start the negotiation process, the peace talks, as you call them, as you rightly said, in November 2012, and they define an agenda that has 6 items, and they are the following ones, like agrarian reform, political participation, end of the conflict, drug trafficking, victims, and implementation of the agreements. They started the negotiations in November, and in the first 6 months, they reached the first agreement on agrarian reform. They decided that they were going to do a comprehensive agrarian reform and that they were going to build some infrastructure in the countryside. Then 6 months later, they reached an agreement on political participation. They decided to create a comprehensive security mechanism to protect the members of FARC who decide to demobilize. And they also decided to create some electoral circumscriptions for FARC members to be able and other regions to have more visibility in Congress in the future, in the peace, in the post-conflict scenario. 6 months later, they reach another agreement on the illicit drugs issue. They agreed to have a comprehensive policy on consumption, and they also, the FARC, agreed to do demining in the regions where they have to set up, you know, they had mines in order to protect illegal crops.
Landmines.
Yeah, landmines in order to protect it. And then this was right in the middle of the presidential campaign. So they started discussing one of the most difficult issues, as Gwen was mentioning, that is the victims issue. And in order to do that, and as this was in the middle of the presidential campaign, they very quickly reached an agreement on 10 points of how they were going to deal with these issues in order to protect rights to reparations, rights of truth and justice and all these things. And ever since, they have been discussing this. Now, the most innovative mechanism in this part of the agreement, in this discussion, is that, as Gwen mentioned it, they have allowed delegations of victims to visit the negotiation table in Havana. And the most interesting thing of this mechanism is that they bring 12 victims for a day, and these victims can stand in front of both sides who have been perpetrators of violence in Colombia and point fingers at them and say, you did this, you did this, you did this. And the parties have no right to reply. So they can only listen.
I didn't know that. That's very interesting.
It's absolutely interesting. And then they just come out with an official report and saying what happened there. So I think that's an incredible mechanism, that has been created. And we are not reached an agreement on that point yet. Because parallel to that, the negotiation table decided also to create a historic commission for victims of the conflict. And we have now 12 academics in Colombia writing a report that will be probably handed over to the table the first week of December. With that, that will be an insumo that the negotiation team parties are going to take in order to reach an agreement on that point of victims. Finally, just to close with this, they have created a subcommission on to deal with gender issues, because so far women who were campaigning strongly to have a voice in the peace process felt that the agreement so far reached did not have a strong gender component. So this subcommission is going to revise, it's going to review all the previous agreement and give a gender dimension that balances out the whole thing. So I think that's so far how it has developed.
So you would say then probably this current issue, the current point on the agenda, that of the victims of the conflict, is perhaps the thorniest issue that they're discussing, that they're on the six-point agenda. Would you say that this is the one that's going to take the most amount of time?
I don't know about in terms of time, but I think that there are several reasons which make this a very sensitive and controversial point of discussion. I think they're all controversial. In fact, we were in a breakfast this morning talking about the role of the media in the peace process. And one of the participants happened to say something which stuck in my head. And she said, you know, you talk to someone from the right, mm-hmm. and they, you know, normal human being, nice, lots in common, you can find things in common, and then suddenly you start talking about land reform and it's like they're a different person, she said. It's like they're no longer a good human being. I think that was more or less the phrasing that she used, and I thought that was really interesting, because that just goes to show how all of these issues, even something that sounds like it could be quite technical to do with how you divide up the land, actually go very deep into the identities, political and emotional identities of huge sectors of Colombians. And it's about class, it's about money, it's about ownership, it's about economic models, it's about all kinds of things. But I think predominantly it's about identity. And I think one of the things here, why is the victims issue so important to talk about? I think, again, identities. One of the main problems in the Colombian conflict has been the polarization of victims of state violence and victims of guerrilla violence. And now I think there's a growing recognition that victims are victims are victims. No experience of suffering is the same, and they're all human experiences of suffering. And just because they're victims of different actors, that doesn't mean they should be necessarily treated any differently. They should all be recognized. They should all be given the space to be told, yes, you suffered, it wasn't right, and you know, then legal implications and so forth. And there's been such a polarization in this society about the guerrilla are terrorists, the whole discourse that Andre was mentioning that was promoted under Uribe about the fight against terrorism. So people who are victims of FARC are victims of terrorism, whereas people who are victims of the state or something completely different. And I think it's really important that, first of all, that it's recognised in public opinion that it's important to have a multiplicity of victims, and that also you're never going to have a representativity because, by nature, victimisation is personal. And also, I think it's very important for the people who've come, the victims themselves, because many, I think it's not very frequent until recently where there've been the spaces of public forums, public opinion, whereby victims of the guerrilla and victims of state violence actually come face to face and talk to each other. And I think, you know, that's been absolutely fundamental, and I think that's one of the reasons that makes this a very thorny issue to discuss, because really you're getting to the heart of the matter, which is, is this a fight between two armed actors, or is it terrorism and legitimate use of violence in order to suppress it? And these are sort of things that speak to people's identities, that people speak to people's classes, that people's different experiences of being in Colombia. So it is a very tough issue to deal with.
But when, if you allow me, I think also it shows that the geopolitical moment in which we live, victims have become very important as part of a global liberal identity. You know, this idea of victims is something that has become very important after the end of the Cold War. If you think about the previous peace processes in Colombia, for example, the victims didn't have any role to play in the negotiation. It was just only between the armed actors. So I think this is something important, and Colombia somehow is trying to fulfill the demands of the international community. Now, that said, and thinking that is a tough issue, I tend to think that the thorniest issue is not that one. I think, let me just try to put this together, because I think we need to think the five or the six points of the agenda as something that are interrelated. The reason why we need to have the first point, that is agrarian reform, is because that's the origin of the armed conflict. So we needed to deal with the origins of the armed conflict. The reason why we needed to talk about political participation, it was because in the first attempt to solve that origin of the armed conflict, that was giving political participation to FARC, what that did was to increase the violence, and we end up in a war cycle of violence. So the lack of political participation has prolonged the armed conflict. And that's linked with the fourth point of the agenda, that is drug trafficking, because the way to prolong the armed conflict was by resorting to the money made out of drug trafficking. And that has created an incredible universe of victims. As Wen said, more than 6 million victims in Colombia, and you need to deal with them. They have become political actors in Colombia. Now they have senators, now they have mayors, now they have become, you know, 6 million. I mean, it's not like we're talking about a small group. It's more than 10% of Colombian population. So with those sort of things, we have to deal then with the most difficult thing, that is disarm and demobilize and reintegrate FARC. Because, and I think that's going to be the thorniest issue, and that was the third point in the agenda, but has been put forward, deferred to the last point, because of that. That's going to be very challenging. They have been fighting for more than 50 years. They have, you know, they have very strong structure, political and economic structures, a way of life. And actually, they feel that the times that they have tried to demobilize, they don't have the protection by the state. And I don't know how that's going to happen. So that's going to be a long, long discussion that's going to take some time.
And I think that brings us back to the importance of spaces like Rodemos el Diálogo, because I think it's very important to, at this stage, even before the signing of an agreement, already be dealing with the mindsets of people and preparing them for how the panorama is going to be. And as Andre says, demobilization and what you do with these people. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think, you know, it's very common to hear people say, oh yes, no, I think it's a good idea, the peace process is important. I hope they can manage to do that. This country's been at war for too long, da, da, da. And then you say, so would you hire a contract an ex guerrillero in your business, and then suddenly it gets personal and, oh no, you know, how would you feel if your doorman was an ex-combatant? No, that's very complicated. You know, I have daughters, or, you know, things get very personal very quickly, and people suddenly find that things that they're in agreement with in theory, when it comes to actually putting them into practice on a daily social level, it's a real challenge. And so I think it's very important for people to start thinking about these things from now. I was in a forum the other day when a guy who was a businessman suddenly said, you know, I know what we can do. You know, there's what, 12 million fighters? There's at least 12,000 fighters in this country. Sorry, 12,000. There's at least 12,000 businesses. We each hire one. That's that. You know, but you know, actually, there's a lot to be done. You know, they'll have roles with demining, as Andre mentioned. But I think that really is going to be, the post-conflict is actually going to be harder than the arrival of the agreements, because it's about getting society to really make the effort to do this, and it's about the demobilization and the reintegration, but it's also about this culture of dialogue and recognizing that people who are different from you, who have different opinions, are part of your society, and that's what makes a country a democracy.
Fantastic points. I have to say thank you to both of you, because you've really, really been informative and really obviously up to speed, academics and people who work in the field, who know what you're doing. And of course, yes, post-conflict is going to be far more complicated than signing an agreement. I mean, that's the truth of it. The post-conflict is going to be costly, lengthy, and I think at some levels painful as well, because it's really going to... But I hope the listeners out there have enjoyed this chat today that we've had with Gwen Bernier and Andre Gomez. If you want to know more about what's going on in the organization to which they belong, Rodeemos el Diálogo, please look it up, rodeemoseldialogo.org. If you don't understand my Spanish, look it up on the Facebook site, because it'll be spelled out there. And they've of course got a Facebook site, Rodeamos el Diálogo. They're on Twitter. These guys are active. They're making, you know, doing cultural, sort of cultural events to inform. And my final note really is saying this, that I have attended two of these events. It's fantastic. I've learned a great deal. And what I most enjoyed is everyone has had a mutual respect for one another. You all get an opportunity to talk, you know, to discuss the issues that are being, raised in that particular event. And so it's been something that's been very beneficial to me as a person, as a journalist, as someone who's an observer of what's going on here in Colombia. This has been Colombia Calling. I've been Richard McCall. Thank you for listening.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires. Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.